Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Stephen Allen Wilson.
What's next? This is a great feeling. And again, it's just one of those things that, you know, I always encourage people now, if you run your first race, think about what's next, but take a moment and enjoy what you've just done, which I did. But for me, it was just something inside me. It just triggered something. And I was like, man, this, how have I not been part of this? How have I not been out here being part of this community and part of this energy? Because it feeds my soul, and it's so, so lovely.
On this episode of The Rundown, I spoke to another one of Canada's track and field elites, national record holder and Olympian, Andrea Sakafian. Early on, Andrea never identified as an athlete. That was until she discovered running. She stuck with it through school, but only started to realize she had a future in the sport at the end of university. She's had her share of ups and downs, but with perseverance and persistence, she's been able to chase down Olympic standards, world championships, and most recently breaking the national half marathon record. So hang on, you're in for a treat. Are you already subscribed to The Rundown, running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to our weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Visit iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. In this week's news, it's wintertime here in North America, and the cold might be keeping you from running. According to runningmagazine.ca, it might actually be the best time for you to get out there, especially if you're new to it. Since so many gyms are shut down, there's no better place to exercise than the great outdoors. So here's 5 reasons why winter is a great time to start running outside. First, it's just a great way to get outside. We tend to hibernate in winter because it's too cold. So it's a great way to work our mental and physical health. Secondly, it's cold outside, which for a beginner might make things a little easier. People tend to want to start running in the summer when it's hot, but it may also make things more difficult to regulate your body temperature in the heat. So layer up and get moving. But if you get too warm, and trust me, you will, simply remove a layer and you're good to go. Third, it'll force you to run slow. For a beginner runner, this is key to prevent injuries. You want to ease into speed and mileage, so slowing down when looking for snow and ice is a great way to do it. By summer, you'll have a solid base to hit some intervals or tempos. Fourth, winter is the time to bundle up and head out for a little jog. So if you're feeling self-conscious about getting started, no worries. There's way less people on the streets, and with all your running gear on, you'll go unnoticed. And last but not least, winter running is so much easier than you think. Get yourself a good pair of running tights, a windbreaker jacket, a flashlight if you're running at night, and I'd suggest some trail shoes for a little extra grip. So slow down, avoid slips and falls, and have fun. Make sure to check the show notes for links to information about this article, as well as the ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support, so please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run. I've mentioned it before and I'll say it again. We've had some of the best female runners in the country, in Canada that is, and my next guest is no exception. She's a track and field Olympian, world championship finalist, and a national record holder. She now resides in Australia, and I'd like to welcome to the show Andrea Sakafian.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on and taking the time with us. How are things going where you are down under?
Actually, really good. We are going into the Australian summer, so this is definitely like the best time of the year to be in Australia. I'm really excited for what's coming up.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, you're catching me on a day where it's like minus 20 here in Canada and in Montreal where I am. So it's nice to hear you're nice and cozy over there. How have things been different for you there with COVID and everything and training?
Yeah, so Australia took sort of a approach that many Asia Pacific countries have taken, where they're very strict about lockdown. And I think without saying it, their goal was to eliminate the virus. So Australia was tracking like quite well earlier in June. Obviously, it's an island country. They quarantine. They already have practice with quarantine, and they set up like hotel quarantine for international travelers. So basically, like no virus was getting in, and it was really controlled. And then in the state of Victoria, where I live, there was unfortunately like a hotel quarantine breach where, we had this massive like explosion of infections in sort of July, August. And then we went through a very intense lockdown. It was 111 days, really, really strict. Like it was pretty much a police state. But now, thankfully, we have had new cases for, I think, about 40 days in Victoria. And then for the whole country, like very, very few cases. I think we're probably at a week of absolutely no cases. And then anything that does come up is just from like international travelers. So yeah, Australia is in like a really, really good position. Haven't had many deaths at all. Yeah, I'm just really thankful to live here. I feel like I'm like gloating a bit, but it is just, yeah, just being on an island is definitely a benefit.
Yeah, totally. And you're catching us at kind of like a, where it's the opposite, where we're seeing, at least where I am, a spike in cases. And maybe there's something to learn from what other places are doing too, it's been a challenge for everybody, but certainly that lockdown early on kind of pays off. And you guys had that twice, didn't you? I think I was reading where it was like,
yeah,
full on lockdown for you guys.
So we had an initial lockdown in March, just sort of like the rest of the world. And it wasn't as intense. I felt like it wasn't even as strict as in Canada. Like in sort of like shopping centers, retail stores were still open. So you could like still go to IKEA. You could like redecorate your house if you wanted to, which I thought was crazy. I was just like, oh my gosh, this country is doing it totally wrong. But then like the cases got under control again, just because like Australia is also just not that populated. Like Melbourne, where I live, there's 5 million people, but the rest of Australia is like just much like smaller population and more rural areas. So yeah, we got down to like very, very low infections. And then the second lockdown was where it was like, there was a curfew. You couldn't leave your house. There was a 5K radius, like those sort of rules. So yeah, it was just like a completely different situation the second time.
So how did the training change for you, or how did you have to adapt to comply with the new rules?
We were obviously like training alone. You couldn't meet with anyone outside of your household. The 5K radius, I think it sounds worse than it actually is. Or I'm just really lucky in where I happen to live, in that I actually had like everything that I needed within 5K, and you could drive to exercise. So I did have like a track, a place to do like a long threshold, decent places to run. So it actually didn't affect my training that much. Obviously gyms were closed, couldn't get treatment, those sort of things. But, yeah, I just think I was like lucky in where I live and what my radius was.
Right. So, yeah, but I know you train with a team now too. So was that maybe challenging to train alone instead of with your teammates, which you've been used to for the last few years?
Yeah. I mean, that was definitely tough, but I do think that sometimes it's beneficial to train alone. I think like you learn just different mental strength, like coping mechanisms that you maybe wouldn't learn when you're in a group. And just doing those like long sessions alone, I do think it is beneficial just for strength, for mental strength, for just, yeah, just being tough. Like, I wouldn't want to do it all the time, obviously. Like, it's not that enjoyable, but I do think there, yeah, you do get something out of it.
Is there any tricks that you can share maybe that you've discovered in this time where you've been training alone?
Yeah, I definitely learned a lot of different mental strength, sort of like coping mechanisms to like get through tough sessions. Like, I know Gabriella actually talked about this when she was on your show, but just like focusing on like the moment that you're in, like either a lap at a time or 200 meters at a time, or just like whatever you can comprehend in that moment. That really helped me. I did a lot of like 1K road reps, and I would just be like, okay, get to that sign, which might be only 100 meters down the road, but it just sort of like breaks everything down. And then you sort of have like a checkpoint. And yeah, just thinking like, oh, it's not over until it's over. Like if I do a long threshold and I feel like crap at the beginning, that's not how you're necessarily going to feel the whole time. Like you may come good at 8K, just like don't give up at 2K. And then also just focusing on like the physical things that I can control with my body, like ribs down, like sort of like relax your shoulders, focusing on my breath. If I start to sort of panic, I like lean back, which just isn't a great way to run. But if you sort of like can just control those few things, like I would usually start to feel better. So just, yeah, like being, I guess those are sort of all like mindfulness techniques.
Yeah. And when you're alone, like those are key. And I'm honored that you listened to Gabriella's episode. That's great. We had her on not too long ago.
Yeah. She's a good friend of mine. So always try to keep up with what she's doing.
Yeah. So that's awesome. And, so can we go back maybe to the beginning of who Andrea is and kind of where you're from and when running kind of came into your life?
Yeah, so I'm from Guelph, Ontario, which is actually like a really nice place to grow up as a runner. I really appreciate it until I left and lived in Toronto. But yeah, I started running just in elementary school, just like as part of, you know, gym class or whatever, those little like races that we would do to decide who would go to like the city competitions. And I always did like quite well. But I, yeah, hadn't like really no idea about running as like a sport or anything like that. It was just like something that I did. And growing up, I did do a lot of activities. Like I had really great parents who, yeah, just like it kind of encouraged us to try everything. So I did dance. I played soccer. I played instruments. I just had like so many things going on as like a little kid. So it wasn't until high school that I really sort of decided that running was something that I wanted to do. I think I showed like a bit of talent in grade 9 when a coach of a local track club, the Guelph Track Club, asked me to join his club. And from there, I started like actually training properly, started like learning a bit more about what like opportunities there were in the sport. And yeah, just yeah, tried to make like OFSA and things like that. And yeah, just really sort of got more into like the high school running and the provincial running at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think Krista Duchesne actually went to University of Guelph too, eventually. So yeah, it's like a running mecca in Canada, I think. So that's kind of cool. And so like, do you remember what your connection was to running early on? Do you remember anything about it that stood out to you, or was just something that you could do at school and it was fun for you?
I think it was just something that, like, I'm actually not athletic, like, at all. I never played like basketball or anything like that. Like soccer, I feel good at only because I could run. And so to find something that was athletic that I was actually good at, was just sort of like exciting for me, because I never really like identified with being an athlete. Like I hated gym class. I hated anything that was like with a ball, or I just couldn't do any of those things. So yeah, I think it was just like when you are a kid and you find something that you're good at, I think it's just like a real confidence boost for you. So I think that's sort of why I like kept with it.
That's awesome. So were there other kids that you knew that were also into that too? Or was it a big program that they had going, or?
So the Guelph Track Club, it actually was quite big. There was also like a sprint coach, like a jumps coach. And so it was like quite big. And when I was there, there was a good group of girls as well. One of my friends, actually, who also went to my high school, was part of this group as well. So that was fun to just sort of like grow up in the sport together, and like compete for our high school together. And yeah, just to know like these other girls from other high schools. So it was just like also a bit of like a social element as well.
Mm. Did you start to see like a future in that for yourself, or did somebody realize that you had some potential to go to the next level, like in your education even?
Yeah, at the time there were some older girls on the team who were in grade 11 or 12 when I was in grade 9, and they were starting to look at like scholarships to the States. And I just thought that was so cool, like that you could like go and get your education paid for and run in the NCAA. Like I was just like obsessed with this idea. And so they all went to the States. And one of them was Alex Becker, actually, who did like quite well at Tulsa. And so yeah, that was sort of like early on that, like the idea that you could go and compete like in a varsity team, that was like put in my mind early that was like something that I wanted to do. And then, yeah, just like the possibility that could lead to like a professional career, just as like a little kid, like a 14-year-old, I was like, wow, that would be really cool. But I didn't, at the same time, I also didn't really have like huge aspirations like that. Like, I don't think I wasn't one of those people who was like, oh, I watched someone win an Olympic medal and I thought I'm going to be an Olympian. Like, I didn't really think that was for me. I thought like, oh, maybe I'll like go to the NCAA. So.
Right. So like, is that what you ended up doing? Like you ended up going away to school, I guess. And did you realize that dream? Like when did you start taking yourself like more seriously, I guess, you know, like, cause clearly you have some talent for a non-athlete, like you call yourself. Or a non-athletic person, you have some talent in running. So just like, I'm always curious, kind of, you know, I used to run and play soccer in high school, and, you know, I'm not an elite athlete, but, you know, only found it kind of later on. Didn't realize the potential in it at all, but now kind of like took it all in, you know? So I'm just curious, like, you know, you associate the school and the athletics that come together, that's awesome. But then like when you start to believe in yourself and say like, yeah, I can totally do this.
I think it wasn't until actually like quite late, like probably late university when I was at the University of Guelph, because I wasn't actually a good junior. Like I was good, but I never medaled at OFSA. I never made a junior team or a junior national team. There were people who were much better than me at that in high school. Like I was always sort of like fourth place at OFSA, sixth place at OFSA, like good, but you know, there are girls running like 9:30 in the 3K and I was like a 10-minute kind of person. Mm-hmm. So I was sort of like, oh, I don't know. Like I liked it and I felt I could be better at it, but I don't think there would have been like a single person who was like, oh yeah, that girl is going to make the Olympics. Like I'm sure they would have named like five other people before me. So yeah, so it wasn't really until like probably 2012 when I won the CIS cross country championship. That was probably the moment where I was like, sort of started to realize like, oh no, wait, I can be like a lot better at this. That was like a pretty big turning point for me. Cause I honestly like did not expect to win that race. So that, I don't know. I think that just like opened my eyes a bit that like I could be like the best in the country at least.
Yeah. Which is still like pretty exciting to be able to say that, you know, a lot of times we're just like in our communities and, you know, we see the people around us and, you know, it's all this, it's always comparing yourself to what you see, you know, but, you know, now even like you're training in Australia, you're on the world stage, competing against other countries, against other people, like it's gotta be like exciting, you know? So like you're saying, to win that kind of race when you didn't expect it, like that's got to be a pretty awesome feeling. Do you remember what that feeling felt like to win a big race like that?
Yeah, I wanted to win, of course. Like in that season, it was like a huge goal of mine to like medal. And obviously at the time, like Guelph was in that sort of like dynasty time and we were trying to win the team championship, which was like the main goal, but individually I really wanted to medal. And I had raced that London course a couple of times before, and I would just occasionally like visualize that the last stretch that's like 500 meters. It's like quite long. And just like coming down and I'm in a medal position and like just on runs, I'd like think about that often. And so when it was actually happening in real life, I was like, oh my gosh, like, is this real? Like it almost felt like a dream because I had like thought about it so many times. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was quite surreal. And then like turning around and like seeing Carice Thompson was second that year. And then Jen was fourth. Like it was just, I don't know. It was just really cool to see like that team do so well.
Yeah. That's incredible for sure. Did you start to like think about what your future looked like after that race and like maybe where your potential could go?
I think still at like not like a huge level, but that summer was there was a FISU championship or a FISU championships. And I wanted to make that team. And so after that I was like, oh, surely I can compete for Canada. Like I can, you know, run that time. And that was like a really big goal. And I didn't end up doing it. I didn't make the team. But yeah, just to sort of have to feel like there was a goal of a national team that seemed realistic. That was sort of like a game changer for me, even though I didn't achieve that goal. But to just sort of still feel like it was like in my grasp. Whereas previously I don't think I ever really felt like even close to making a team.
Mm-hmm. So did like getting close give you that like satisfaction, that belief that you could get there, or like were you disappointed by the result, or like how did you move forward from that point?
Yeah, I was extremely disappointed. yeah, I just tried like over and over again to run the standard and I never did it. And I think, I don't know, like I did learn something in that time, of course, like just to be persistent and like, it's okay if you try to do something and fail. And I think it did help me in 2016 when I was like chasing that standard. But yeah, it was like obviously really disappointing, but I don't think it really changed my career that much. Like it didn't hinder me.
Mm-hmm. But like you're saying that learning those things early on can set you up for success later. And actually I read a bunch of your blog post on Runners Magazine, I think, Canada. Mm-hmm. And it kind of took me through your like 2017, like after the Olympics and to the Worlds, and like what training in Australia was like. And I read a lot of lessons in there. You know, I think that's a lot to be said about that, and like how that can change you as a person and as an athlete, you know? So can you like maybe walk us through like what 2016 was like leading up to the Olympics, and kind of, you know, what you learned there, and kind of like how you've adapted throughout the years to be able to put yourself in a position to maybe get to the Tokyo Olympics?
Yeah, so going into 2016, my PB was 15:52. And the Olympic standard was 15:24. So obviously quite a bit faster than I had run. But I had all of 2015, I was injured. I didn't even race a single time. I was dealing with a plantar issue, and I was just sort of not in like the right training program for me. It was just like really going through, I don't know, just things that you go through when you're 20, 24 or whatever. Just really like questioning if I should still do the sport, and like sort of got through that like tough part, made a decision to like continue. And then I joined the University of Toronto Track Club and was coached by Ross Restuccia, who at the time, it was just like I found the right person for me at that time. Ross was like very, very kind, very emotionally intelligent, just like a really good coach for someone who was just like a bit broken by the sport. So he like really believed that I could make the Olympics despite not having shown like that level at all. And so, yeah, and then just like right away in April, I ran like a 10-second PB, and then ran 10 seconds faster again like a month later, and then ran the standard in the next race. So it was just like I just had this great momentum in those races. And so I think like just if you're coming at something from like so far back, you just sort of need to like chip away. And I think that like, yeah, learning that before was really helpful, and learning that like, it's okay if you like fail the first time, it's not like the end of the world. Like if you have other opportunities, it's okay. And so to just like not panic when I still only ran like 15:39 in that first race. Yeah, so I think that was just like something that was really beneficial to learn early. And yeah, and then obviously at the Olympics, there is like a lot of lessons to be learned, because I had just never been on a stage like that before. I hadn't even run like a Diamond League or anything. I don't even think I had really even done any sort of international competition. So yeah, that was pretty eye-opening and just like shocking for me, because it's just a totally different race. Obviously it's not like a time trial. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
I wanted to ask you, like, do you remember what had changed in your training What did you learn with that coach that kind of took you to the standard? Because like you were leading up to that point, but in quite far from the that standard mark. Do you remember what kind of things you guys were doing or working on to be able to get you there?
I think actually one like major thing was that like through that injury, I was working with Chris Shepherd at the Runners Academy, who is a chiropractor and he's also a strength coach. And that was the first time that I had really done like proper strength work. And he really helped just like clean up my stride, just make me like a much stronger runner, like physically in the gym, which translated on the track because like I just had like a better, more powerful stride, which I do think really helped. Like I think I was sort of like limited by just like the way that I was running in university. We really just like worked on just running like faster, more like 3-minute Ks, like getting used to that like sort of pace that I would have to run 15:20. So just sort of like the combination, I think, of those two training programs, like got me to that like 15:17 that I ran that year. So yeah, I think it was just like I did need all of that time at Guelph and like doing those things to get to where I was. But yeah, it just was like the University of Toronto program. Yeah, just sort of like closed the gap a little bit.
Right. And then, so that's, yeah, it's good that you figured that out because that's kind of like what it sets a good, sounds like it set a good base for even your professional career with like the strength training. And I'm sure once you, you know, it's all about belief, right? You see something that works and then you get that result that you were looking for. Like, did you, you must have felt amazing like at that point. And then to qualify for the Olympics, like, what an amazing thing that is. What did you think the Olympic experience would be like compared to what you actually experienced? Because you said like there's a lot of lessons. So as a precursor to learning about that, you know?
I did really think that I could make the final. Like I thought that I was like really fit. But I was really fit in a way to run an even pace. And this is not to like, I think Ross is a great coach and I'm not like knocking his program, but I just, it's not a time trial. It's a fartlek. And it's like, yeah, those races are just like unpredictable. You're shifting gears. You're like trying to close in a 250K. Like I just wasn't prepared for that style of racing. If it had just been a straight, like 15, whatever, flat race, like, yeah, maybe I could have made the final, but it's not, it never is. So yeah, just sort of learning like where to be positioned in the race, where like, yeah, how to just sort of like roll through like the first 3K that are going to be like, who knows what's going to happen. And you just have to be like fit enough to absorb whatever is going to happen.
Yeah, that's yeah, and you're facing, you know, going into, you're facing the top runners in the world too, right? So this is like a challenge that, you know, you, like you said, it's the biggest stage you were on too. Like, was like, were nerves through the roof? Were like, what were you feeling like internally?
Yeah, I was definitely very, very nervous. I mean, obviously, like it's just, it's the Olympics, like, you know, like it's just people like dream of that forever. And I was really nervous. I felt like I did okay, I think, at like managing that. But yeah, definitely another thing that like probably could have been better. Yeah, and just sort of like, I don't know, I guess like there is like a lot to learn about just how to live in like a village like that and how to do things and just like stay focused.
Mm. Yeah, because you're kind of like, you were in quarantine before quarantine was popular kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt like I was there for too long. Like I, if Tokyo is going to be like a completely different thing, and I don't even know what's going to happen. But if I were to pick again, I would try to just like limit the amount of time that I was in the village.
Okay. Is there a specific reason for that? Like, I know it was like difficult to get a good cup of coffee too. Like when I read that, you know, comparing Olympics to Worlds, it's two different ball games, you know, because like you say, you stay in the village for the Olympics. Worlds is a little bit more free, I guess you could say, where you can come and go as you please kind of thing.
Yeah, you're just sort of like trapped in there, especially in Rio, where it was just like possibly a bit dangerous if you were to go out alone. But yeah, just the running was terrible in Rio. Like we had to just do laps of the village. Mm. And just like things like that. And like the food wasn't great in Rio. It was so like, it just would have been better if I could have stayed where I was and just sort of had like my normal routine. And then, yeah, like whatever, 3 days before gone rather than, I don't know. I feel like I was in there for like quite a while before my race. So,
right. So how do you adapt then when the food isn't what you're used to, living's not what you're used to? Like, do you like narrow down your menu? Do you like, what are some things you do in terms of just like learning to adapt when you haven't experienced that culture before?
Now I definitely think I'm much better at just like rolling with whatever. Like Doha is another example of just something that was just so completely different than like obviously a normal way that I would train. Like I did all of my running on a treadmill. And then the one session that I did do before my race, it's like 40 whatever degrees and 1,000% humidity. So you just, now I feel like it's just whatever, you just do it and you just don't think about it. And the food there was also like kind of terrible, but you just eat it and it's just whatever. But I think when I was a bit younger, I would be more like freaking out about every single little detail. And it just like wastes energy. Obviously, like you want things to be in like a certain way, but it's not really going to be like that. And in Doha, I was only there, I think, 2 days before my race, which is just a better situation.
Okay, so you're kind of like in and out kind of thing in terms of just so. Was there a reason for that actually? Or is it because you learned from the Olympic experience and you're like, oh, just go in and come out and that's it? Or
I was coming down from altitude, so you don't. Yeah, you just have to kind of time it right.
Have you experienced a lot of that actually, training at altitude? I know where you are in Australia, you have the ability to do that. I also read that you trained in Flagstaff too. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, my coach, we like go to altitude as a group a lot. Last year I did, I don't even know how many camps. It was like 4 or 5 altitude camps. So in Australia, we go to a place called Falls Creek. It's just a drive from Melbourne. It's in like the mountains of Australia, which are not super high. I think it's like 1,600 meters. So that's just sort of like medium altitude. And then Flagstaff is where we would usually go before Peyton Jordan, which is obviously extremely high and everyone goes there. And then when we're in Europe, we go to St. Moritz or somewhere in Spain, which are also sort of like medium to high altitude. And either at the beginning of the season, just as sort of like a top up of fitness, or yeah, before our major championships, we would go to and do like a month long altitude camp.
Okay. And you get like I know that I hear the benefits are incredible. Do you find it like challenging when you get there? Like how long does it take you to adapt to the altitude and like catching your breath kind of thing?
It really depends. I find Flagstaff is just, it's so high. Like it's so much higher than what we would do like in Australia. So that does take quite a while. And I find like you do sort of have to be a bit careful, like the whole time of how hard you're going. Somewhere like St. Moritz, I just don't think it's that high. it's tough like to do sessions, but I feel like you do feel pretty normal on like an easy run. So that like, yeah, like 1 to 2 days. I think when I went before Worlds, I did a workout like the first day I was there.
Okay.
So about 24 hours. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't done it. I've yet to, and I definitely need to see what that's all about. Cause yeah, it's well, I guess when we can travel again, maybe I'll venture out on a runcation or something, but right now it doesn't look like that'll happen in the near future anyways.
Yeah. They're also just really beautiful places. Like St. Moritz is like the most beautiful place in the world. So they are like, it's worth the trip.
Yeah. I read about that experience for you too, how you said it was like a nicer Flagstaff, if you will, or like a, well, I don't know what word you use exactly, but
it's like so prettier... glamorous. Yeah. St. Moritz is like really luxe. It's like where very wealthy people in Switzerland go to ski. So yeah, the town is just like Maserati dealerships and stuff like that.
Oh my God. Yeah. Crazy. So after that Olympic experience, like 2017, like how do you, you know, it's a high of, let's say, your running career. And then did you suffer any like setbacks in terms of, like, I know when I do like a big race or like big marathon or triathlon, I kind of go into this, well, when I experience the first time, I'm like, what's wrong with me? My energy's so low and I'm a little depressed because like, everything's leading up to that point, you know? Did you kind of feel any of that? And I know you had some issues with sponsors too following that Olympic year. Yeah.
In like an athletic standpoint, I felt still like really motivated because obviously there's just like a world championships the next year. So you can't really like fluff around too much because you want to like make that next team and keep going. And I felt like I was at the beginning of, well, I was at the beginning of my like international career, that I was just like so motivated and I wanted to like get better and make that final and run 15 or sub 15. Like I was just like very, yeah, like just wanted to like keep going. So yeah, I was sort of like, oh, it's sad that that's over, but I didn't like accomplish what I wanted to accomplish. So I did feel very motivated to just do better at Worlds. I think if someone had won or, yeah, just accomplished everything they wanted to at the Olympics, it would be a bit more of like a low. And obviously like people go through that and it's very real. But yeah, for me, I just like was like, oh, well, hopefully next time it goes better. But yeah, the sponsorship thing was really disappointing. I think when you don't really know what track and field is like or what track and field sponsorship is like, you would just assume like, oh, of course, like you make the Olympics and then you sign a contract and that's easy. But I don't know, for some reason in 2016, there is just this, just a real pullback of sponsorship dollars in Canada, definitely. And a lot of people lost their sponsorship and I had no options. And I was just like, what the heck? Like, I'm supposed to be like a professional athlete now. So that was just really disappointing. Like, just, I don't know, like that reality. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of struggle with that a bit. I felt like it is like sponsorship is obviously like a validation in the sport of like you being good. And then I didn't have that. And to line up just like wearing just nothing, like a plain singlet, it's just sort of embarrassing. So yeah, it was just like a bit difficult.
Okay. So like, how did you cope with that? And because it is challenging a little bit, you know, and even some incredible, you know, like medalists even at the Olympics, they've suffered the same thing. And I'm talking, I've had Meb on the show and he also had a similar thing with Nike. So
yeah,
it happens to all range of athletes, you know? So yeah, it's a tough pill to swallow. And like, so how do you cope with that? And what are your like steps to to getting sponsorship even, or do you just keep running? And is that create like a chip on your shoulder, if you will?
So yeah, at the time I was just like, well, I guess I just have to be better. And like every year it's just like, I have to be better. And yeah, I don't know. And then, yeah, also just realizing like, yeah, everybody struggles with it. Yeah. Meb and, Leo Manzano also, I think, lost his Nike sponsorship or something. And, after he was second. And so it's like, I guess this does just happen to everyone, and it's part of the sport, and it is a really tough sport, and there just doesn't seem to be much money in general. So you can't really like base your self-worth off of a sponsorship, because sometimes it is also just random, like who gets it. You know, it's like they're from a certain country and they do a certain event, and so that's why they get it. It's not because they're better, it's just that's what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. So you can't really take it personally. But yeah, now thankfully I'm sponsored by Nike, and it took me making a world championships final and breaking 15 to even achieve that. So I think if I had known that earlier, like it wouldn't have bothered me so much that I had to achieve like such a huge like performance to even get a contract. Like I think just, yeah, it would have just been easier to deal with.
Hmm. On that kind of note, like looking back, are there some things you would change, or what would you tell a younger version of yourself?
I think there were times where I was like very focused on it, and like it was probably like detrimental. Like I felt like every time I had like a big race, like a Diamond League or whatever, it was always just this sort of like nagging thing, like, oh, if you break 15, maybe this is like the time that you could finally get sponsored. And I think that was, it definitely like hindered me. It was just like added pressure, because yeah, just who knows what it would have taken at that point. So yeah, I think I just would have not just like put that extra pressure on myself. And also maybe like just done other running to make money, like just run on the roads more, which is just like an easy way to make money.
Okay. So like enter different competitions.
Yeah. Like do. Yeah. Or like just, I mean, there are like lots of road races in Canada that I just, yeah, never really did. Mm. And that could have just been like another source of income.
Right. So how did you support yourself, I guess, through that time then? If I know Athletics Canada helps athletes, but was that enough? And like, did you have to work, or like even as a pro?
Yeah, just karting. I mean, I was just like really poor.
Okay. Like,
yeah.
Just rationing and that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think the support from Athletics Canada is very good in comparison to other places in the world. Just hearing what Australians get. So it's not like I think we're actually like very, very fortunate, and you can live off of it and you can train off of it because you also get a budget. So I never really felt like any constraints that way. Like I did still go on like a lot of camps and that sort of thing. So it wasn't, I think, yeah, if I was from like a different country, it'd be much more challenging.
Hmm. So in that same year, you also made the move to Australia, right? And so yeah. Like, was that a difficult decision for you to make? I know your now fiance, I don't know if he was at the time, but got an opportunity over there. So probably swayed you a little bit, but was it hard to leave home?
No. I really wanted to come to Australia. I really wanted to join the Melbourne Track Club. I wanted to be coached by Nick. These were all things that we had like talked about, like Jamie and I had talked about, and it was like very planned that this was like where we wanted to be. So when Jamie like got this job, it was just like, it was so exciting. And I mean, I loved Toronto, and that's where I was living at the time. And I loved Ross, and I loved like everything about that. But it was just like, I think it was a good move. And yeah, just training in Australia is like so much easier, like just weather wise. And I don't know, it's just like a really nice place to live. So It is really far away from Canada. And that is like sometimes, yeah, obviously like I miss home. I haven't been home in a year, but yeah, Melbourne is like a really great city.
And good for your future in athletics too, right? So you got to think, you know, that's something you're trying to pursue as well. And yeah. And like I read too, you mentioned that, you know, you thought at one point that you might have one coach for your career, but now you've had a few coaches. And, you know, with every coach comes different expertise and different training. And was your body like ready for a change too? Like, were you, like you said, you were excited to join that run club and join Nick. Why was that? Like, why was that such a big opportunity for you in your eyes?
I had just seen how Nick's athletes like compete at championships. Like he would always have just so many people in the final, like top eight. He just had these athletes who could like get there. And I just didn't know like what was it that I wasn't doing that I would just get beat by these people. And so I needed to know like what is the gap that needs to be filled for me to make a final. And so I felt like there was obviously something that I'm missing and I need to train better to be able to actually like compete in these races. Because I think it's like one thing, team, and that's nice, but you know, like going home after the first round, it's really disappointing. It's like, I don't know, it's just, it sucks. Like you're not in like the actual race where the medals are decided. You're just sort of like making up the numbers. And that just was like something that I didn't want to do that anymore. Like it's, I don't know. I think it was just like, I felt like it was just such a failure both in 2016 mm-hmm. and 2017. So I really just wanted to like, know, like, how do you make a final? So, I just wanted to train with Nick because it just seemed like his athletes made it look so easy.
That's a challenge. And you had aspirations to do much better than you did. And then, like you say, to not even make it past the first round, it's got to be tough for sure. And you got to ask questions. Is it something I'm thinking in my own, you know, when I've been coached as well, when you don't get the performance that you want, you know, there's everything you can do as an athlete, but then what are some of the questions you ask your coach in order to maybe get different results the next time?
It was sort of tough because I was running like personal bests, but I was improving, but like not improving in championship racing. So it's like, obviously this program is still working, but I can't seem to get fit in that specific way. So yeah, I don't know. It is like a bit confusing. Like, I didn't really know what questions to ask, you know?
Mm. Yeah. Cause there's nothing really wrong. You're still getting the result personally, you're getting the result, but then there's such a big gap between yourself and your competition at the Worlds, let's say. That's gotta be tough. So now, like now that you are training with, like your competition, mm-hmm. What are some things that have changed for you that are getting you closer to your objective?
Yeah. So Nick's program is pretty much the opposite of what I was doing. So that is the answer. So Nick's program is really like, we don't run like super impressive times. Like if I were to like write my workouts on Strava or whatever, people would be like, oh, that's like, this person's crap. But it's like the length of the workouts and the fact that we don't get rest in workouts. Like if we get rest, it's 30 seconds standing or a lap jog where Nick will get angry if we're like not jogging quick enough. So it's just like we're, the purpose is like to be running hard for like 40 minutes without really stopping on the track. And then we do like a long threshold where it's like 10 to 12K at like sort of like whatever your threshold pace is. And it is just like a lot of running. It's a lot of volume. It's a lot of like hard running, like hills and things like that. So nothing individually is like that impressive, I don't think, but it's just all of it together, like week after week, it's just like a lot of volume, a lot of running, a lot of like endurance work. So you get like really, really fit. And then you can run fast. Whereas I think like some programs you like, they try to run fast, but you're not really fit enough to hold that pace.
Okay. So, and all the women that you're running with, are you ranging in distances in terms of your goals, or are you like, how does that look like in terms of, you know, do you all have different goals and you're trying and you're doing similar mileage? And then you kind of hone in on your event closer to the race?
It is actually, it's not very individualized, actually. People like obviously manage their own mileage, and some people run more like based, like obviously if you're going to run the marathon, you're running more. Some people can't handle it, like a super high mileage load. So they run less. So those sort of things like change. But in terms of like the sessions, we all sort of do the same thing. And then as it nears to like the championships, we may do like slightly different things. But it is like, I think Nick's like sort of philosophy is just like, you have to like train the heart. And then that just will cover everything. Obviously like the marathon again is like, they do completely different sessions. That's like a totally different thing. And then like the 1500 meter runners would do like more speed and stuff, but like 3K steeple, 5K, 10K is all very similar.
Okay. And so like, I know you just ran an incredible half marathon. But are you still, is most of your training still focused on doing the 5 and the 10?
Yeah, it is. So for this half that I did,
And congrats, by the way.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it was just, I'm like so glad that race happened. I wouldn't even really care, honestly, about the result. I was just like so happy to run a race. But for that specific race, I just did a longer threshold and a 2 hour long run. So it wasn't really different. I was maybe running, yeah, like a bit more than the people who were just, there was also a 10K at that event. So just like running a bit more than them. But now, yeah, going forward, yeah, we'll all sort of be like doing the same thing until like, I guess, Tokyo.
Yeah, do you want to share a little bit about that half marathon experience? Like, clearly, like your experience is in the shorter stuff, but what was it like for you? And again, like, what a great result! And yeah, that's awesome.
Like the one in Launceston, just like this past weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was. Yeah, obviously just like such a light at like the end of this whole like COVID tunnel to finally have a race. Like I just felt so much more motivated, and like my training just suddenly got so much better in like the month leading up to that. So I think that was like the main thing that I actually like got out of this race, was just like a focus, motivation. So the race itself, was supposed to actually be a bit more competitive. One of the Australians pulled out, just last week. She was unfortunately injured. So I was actually hoping for it to be just like a bit, just a bit more competitive. But, so the goal was just to win and just have a race. So I just found like a group of guys who were running sort of like 320s and ran with them the whole way. And there was another woman, a two-time Olympian and two-time medalist at Commonwealth. So like a very accomplished runner, 225 marathon, who she had a baby recently. So I think she's sort of just like coming back into form. But yeah, so it was a good race between us. And thankfully got the win and ran 1:11, which I felt was a bit slow. I honestly would have been a bit more happy with like 70 something, but it actually, I don't know. The race director was like hyping this course up as like so flat. It's so, so flat. And then there was this like massive hill. So I feel like it was, I don't know. I'm like, oh, could I even then have run 70 with this hill? And then it was actually like quite a windy day as well.
Mm.
Yeah, so cool. I don't know.
Well, yeah, just,
I don't really, the time is like kind of irrelevant. I feel it was more about like winning. So
yeah, which I guess sometimes it's about that. And sometimes it's just about being in the competition. And sometimes it's for that time, like a, like you're saying, like a Olympic qualifier, you're going for a time, let's say, or, but when you're racing to win, yeah, that's a, that can be a bit different depending on your situation. How do you, does your mind change depending on what you're doing?
So in this race, like I, so like Jess, the other woman, was with me in this like group of guys. And part of me was like, oh, I need to like get away from her. I need to get away from her. But I was like, oh no, this is actually like quite a long race. I can probably wait. So I was always like very aware of like where she was and like trying to like listen to her breathing. And I don't know, I was just like very like obviously like focused on myself, but just also really paying attention to Jess. So sort of like you do kind of want to play like those mind games a bit, or like over some of the other hills, I would sort of like make it look like I was still feeling really good. Like I would sort of like go right up with the guys, and I don't know, I just was sort of trying to like show that I felt really good to hopefully like psych her out a bit. So yeah, you do sort of have that like competitive those sort of like mind games going, whereas like in Marigami when I ran 69:38, I obviously wanted to place well, but that was like definitely about the time. And I was running with a different Australian, Ellie, and like we were like competing against each other, but I didn't really care if I beat Ellie. Like I was more like concerned about the time. So yeah, I do think it is like quite different.
It's just a different mindset altogether. What did that mean to you to break that that Canadian record?
Yeah, it was obviously a goal. It wasn't, I don't know. It was sort of like, it was a goal, but it wasn't a goal. Like I felt sometimes like very, very invested in like trying to run this goal, but then also sort of apathetic about it. Like I was like, oh, but it's also only like my second half marathon. So who knows? But I really just, I think for me, it was more like training for it was like the most important part, because we did do like proper half marathon sessions, which I just felt like was really good for me to do just to like get a bit stronger. And then in the race, like I went out so fast. I was on like 68 something pace, just the way that like the pace groups ended up, I just had to like go with this 315 pace. So then in the race, I was like, okay, yes, I'm definitely going to break this. And then had like a massive blow up in the last 5K. And then just like, I knew what Natasha's 20K split was. And I was like 2 seconds under it. And so then I was just gave like 1,000% to the finish to like try to break the record. So yeah, it was sort of like, I did want it, but I didn't also want to put like too much pressure on myself because I really had no idea. Like I had basically never run this race before.
Right. Yeah. But still like amazing. You did it. We had Tasha on the show too. And it seemed like that half marathon time keeps getting broken. Like,
yeah.
So like it was so quickly. I think she tweeted out like, well, that was fun while it lasted, yeah. Which is totally something she would say, but that she's very happy about the way and how fast Canadian women are running at this time currently. And like we've had, you know, this is our 60th episode actually. And so in that time we've had some exceptional elite female runners. And like I said in the intro, like you're on that list too. So what does it mean to be part of a list like that too? And I saw actually in your Instagram too, I don't know where it was, but you said like Team Canada left their mark, and it's like Reed Coolstat, on the wall, and Lanny Marchand, and like, you know, some legends in the sport, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's really, I mean, it's awesome. Like I think, with like the half marathon record specifically, I think it's just like a really cool story that there are all these women and this record keeps getting broken. And I think it like for a fan, I think that's really interesting and really exciting. And I hope that we can like continue to break this record and like bring it down significantly. And like same with the marathon, like I think that's just really cool that there's like a lot of women who are doing really well. And I also think that you know, like kind of the standard of like distance running in Canada was like just not that good for a while. Like, I don't really know why, like sort of in like the Courtney Babcock era, there just wasn't really anyone running like the 10K to the marathon. So I think it's really exciting that we now have more of like a full team when we go to these events, you know, like just so that there's just like more people competing and like filling out the team. I think it's just like really good that not everyone's just like focused on the 1500 like they were in the 90s. Yeah, just sort of like bring that level of competition up in Canada.
Yeah, there's strength in all the distances and not just in one specific area. Like you have strength in the 5, 10 and now half, and you know, same for like Tasha, and also yeah, there's a few others, and Gabriella is up there too in the 15, and yeah. She's voiced, you know, her maybe desire eventually to go to the 5, and so yeah, it's all very exciting. And from a podcast standpoint, certainly it's good to have these stories kind of at the same time, and kind of where you guys all come from, and how you push each other, you know, even though you're not in the same part of the world. Yeah. So that's awesome. So did you, now that you have a taste for the half, is that something you see in your future, or you want to stick to like 5, 10, you still think that's where your strengths are?
I mean the half, I mean, it's like not a real event. So like in terms of like world or like Olympic championships. So,
correct.
It's sort of just like something that I'll like continue to do. I do really want to run like 68 minutes. That's like my new obsession. I was like obsessed with running 69 for a few years. So now like I just want to run like a minute quicker. But yeah, I think it's just like a good complement to the 10K because it's just like a little bit more training. You get like a little bit stronger. Obviously like the race distance is longer, so it's just like a bit more taxing mentally. That was like why I wanted to do it originally, was because I was hoping to run the 10K this year on the track. And I was like, how can I best prepare for this? And I think just like running a longer distance to sort of like make the 10K seem short was like my goal with like actually running that race in Marigami. So yeah, I just think it's like a good compliment. And then also I think it's good to just be like more diverse, to like be able to run different distances on different surfaces. And it just gives you more opportunities throughout the year to race and just sort of like you need to like be out there and racing. And yeah, if I was like only a 5K runner, only on the track, like that's very limiting.
Mm-hmm. So is that your goal, like moving forward, to race more on any given year?
I think, yeah, like definitely it has been for like basically since I joined like MTC. Nick is really, he's really good at like giving people opportunities to race, and he wants us like out there racing, like, because that's what like your job is. Our job, like nobody sees you training, nobody cares what you do in training. It's really like what you do in a race. So, and obviously like you can make money when you race. So that's just like obviously really important. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like it's just in 2018, I raced a lot. Like for me, that was like just so many more races being part of this group. And then last year, unfortunately, I was injured like quite a bit. So I think I raced like 5 times. But yeah, just to sort of be doing more throughout the year, like, and the roads just like adds just more opportunities.
Right. I read quite a bit about the group that you're currently running with and what it means to run with a group like that of professionals, and to leave, you know, a program that you were one of the top athletes and now you're not, you know. So can you talk about that dynamic a little bit, and maybe, you know, again, like what that experience has been like for you and how important you think it's been to your career?
Yeah, I think that in itself, just being around like this group of women, but also like the men are extremely good as well, has just like opened my eyes to what it takes to be like one of the best in the world. And I've learned like so much from like every single person in this group of how to like train better or recover better or race better or just like generally just be a better runner. And so I think it is like extremely important for me, at least, to be surrounded by a group of people who are just like really striving for like the same things as me, and to also be surrounded by people who have accomplished things that I want to accomplish. Like Jen Gregson is a 2-time Olympic finalist, and just learning from Jen, like she's so tough in sessions and just like trying to learn how to do that as well. Yeah, or just like learning from Sinead, like she's honestly just like a machine. And like, how do you like just get so much better at training that then like translates into racing? Mm-hmm. And also just, yeah, like being around people who are doing things that have like put them in those finals or in the top 8 or whatever, like to know that like this is the training that they're doing, and now I am doing this training, so hopefully I can, yeah, be in the top 8 or whatever next time. So yeah, I think it be... like for me it's like really, really important. I know that people can be successful training alone, but I think like the strength of the group is just like really good, and yeah, it just like pushes you forward, I think.
Mm-hmm. It could, and it's competitive too, right? It's I read that, you know, I keep saying I read because I literally just finished all your articles. But you know, the goal is not to win the workout, it's to win the race, right?
So yeah.
I thought that was a really amazing thing that you said, or reflection on what it is to train with people, especially in workouts, you know. And I think that's pretty cool. And you also talk about details too. Can you talk about the details, like the fine details that might help any runner, like at any level, to improve themselves as a runner if that's what they want to do?
Yeah, I think like, obviously, like I'm a professional athlete and I do like very little outside of running and running specific things. So like, it's easy for me to be like, oh, I just take naps and things like that. But I do think like sleep is like the number one most important thing that you can do. Even if it's just like sleep 8 hours, like that is, I just, even if I, you know, don't sleep well for one night, like I feel that. And so it's just, I don't know. And everyone who's like, oh, sleep is like the cheapest, easiest recovery tool. Like it definitely is. So yeah, just sleep as much as you can. Mm. Also just like eating properly, eating healthy, not like restricting carbs, not restricting anything. That's like also extremely important, like fuel your body properly. In terms of like recovery, those are the two like easiest, cheapest things to do that are just like real, not like gimmicky, dumb things. And then also like, I think like bring a good attitude to your training, like bring like confidence to sessions and just like know for a fact that you're going to have a good session. I think that's like a really important thing that I have tried to do this year is like, just like be confident that you can do it.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. I think that's, yeah, like those two things you mentioned, the sleep and the eating. I mean, those are things we need to do as human beings, right? No matter what you're doing. So like the 8 hours, definitely like, yeah, I started a new job and I'm working remotely. So I definitely need my 8 hours and I feel it if I don't. And so also fueling properly, like I'm like plant-based vegan, so eating a lot of fruits and vegetables and grains and carbs and all that stuff. And also have fun when you're doing it. Make sure that you're, yeah, I like what you said there, where you just bring that positive attitude. Is there anything specific that you eat that's different, or do you have a specific diet?
No, not really. I like really enjoy cooking. It's like, I just like love it. I really like new cookbooks. I really like trying new things. So I don't really like, there's nothing that I don't eat. I basically just like eat real food. That's like, I guess that's like my diet is like real food.
Nice. Any go-tos before a big race?
So actually recently I got a KitchenAid stand mixer for my 30th birthday. And then I bought the pasta attachment, which I highly recommend. So I've been making my own pasta and I eat that before every long run now. And if I were racing at home, I would definitely do that as well. It like is so much better than the dried pasta that you get at a store.
Yeah. My friends are making their own pasta now too. And it's like out of this world. It's, I'm a big pasta eater. So, I can definitely attest to that. And yeah, like what you said too, about like, don't shy away from the carbs. You know, I think we all need it, you know, especially if we're running quite a bit, or being active every single day. I think that's like a key thing for sure. There's a lot of like diets against carbs and low carb and all this stuff, but I think it's something we need to fuel ourselves.
Yeah, definitely. It's like your body's main energy source you can't really like deprive it of that.
I was going to ask you, any superstitions that you have? Because you seem like really like you're focused in your training and you're ready to go. And any superstitions that you have?
No, I don't. I try to just not have any superstitions or any like need to do's before a race, because we just like race everywhere in the world. Like, you know, just like Norway, Doha, like Ireland, here, there, everywhere. Like you don't know like what you're going to get for food. You don't know who you're going to be rooming with. You don't know like you're just going and like you just have to like race no matter what. So I try to just be like very go with the flow, like doesn't matter. So like any superstitions, I just like try to cut that out. It's just not, for me, I just don't, it's not good for you, I don't think. Because then you get like rattled if something like goes wrong.
That's so true, yeah.
Yeah. This one time it took us like a whole day to like get to Finland, and I didn't even run the day before the race. And we got in at like 2 a.m. and it's just like, it was like the worst travel day of all time. And like, I still PB'd in that race because I was just like, oh, whatever. We'll get there when we get there.
Great attitude to have. With all the traveling you've done, where's your favorite place to run? I think I know the answer, but.
For training, yeah, definitely St. Moritz. For competing, I don't know, like there's so many just like really good places in Europe, like really fun crowds. Rome was really cool. I'm Italian, obviously, so like that was really, I don't know, it was cool to just like compete where like my family's from.
So what are you most looking forward to in 2021, if we can get everything under wraps here?
So in Australia, we thankfully have like a whole track season coming up, which is really cool. And I'm really like proud of Athletics Australia for like rescheduling the whole event, like all the events. I think that's just mm-hmm. really cool. I think they could have been like, oh, it's too dangerous, whatever. But yeah, so we have the Australian National 10K coming up in January on the track, where we are setting it up to be like an Olympic standard race. So that's what I'm like most excited for right now. Obviously, it's like the most immediate goal. And then I'll have some other races in Australia, like their 5K championships, maybe some other 5Ks that come up. So I think like people are really fit right now. They're really keen to race. So I think that this season will be really good. Like I think we'll see some really good times, some like Olympic standard times. And then like, I don't know, like, I don't know what the plan is really. I would obviously love to go over to Europe and compete and do Diamond Leagues and just have like a normal season. But I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't, like, it's just so hard to know. Because I know, like, just staying here until Tokyo has been, like, thrown around. And so, yeah, I just, like, there's no way of knowing. I'm obviously also, like, really excited that it seems like the Olympics are going to happen. It's obviously going to be really different from what we would expect. But just to have that happen is like a huge relief for me.
Knowing that it wasn't going to happen or having it canceled, was that how did you react to that news? I mean, the state of the world was not in a great place at that time, but how did it affect you, if any, like getting pushed back?
I thought obviously that was the right decision. That was like very pragmatic. I was very happy that they that their hand was forced to make that decision quickly. It was just so obvious that it wasn't going to happen. And I felt like the sooner they postponed it, the sooner like they could plan something else. So like I was fine with that. I felt like that was the right choice, but I sort of had like a delayed reaction to that whole announcement. Like I felt fine. I felt like kind of just like numb, I guess, for like 3 weeks. And then, I don't know, just sort of as time went on, I don't know. I think it was just not really clear that the Olympics were going to happen. It was becoming increasingly clear that like the track season was not going to happen. I was not going to be traveling. And I was like pretty upset because I was just in a really good position in March. I was really fit. I had just run that record. I felt like a really good plan for the season. I was going to run Peyton Jordan, and then I was in Prefontaine for the 5K. And I think it is very difficult in this sport to be fit and healthy and have opportunities and to have all those things at the same time. And so I felt like I had been working for 3 years to like get to this point where I had all of those things. And then I like finally had this contract from Nike where I was like, hopefully going to actually make like good money. And then just everything, all of those things are just like taken away. And so I did really struggle. Just the loss of like all of that. But I think if you were planning for anything for 3 years, like it just being gone would be very jarring for anyone. So I feel like that was like a normal reaction.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that's why I asked, because I mean, and everybody sees that differently, but you know, not everyone's path is or journey is the same either. So, and I know how, like I've read, like you say, you know, don't waste fitness or don't waste your fitness. Take the opportunities to build off of that momentum, you know, and when you have all that momentum going in that great direction and you feel like everything's clicking, that's got to be a tough like pill to swallow for sure.
Yeah, because
so how do you link the go ahead.
Like who knows what. Well, now again I'm like fit and hopefully have opportunities and things like that, but like it doesn't always end up like that. So yeah, I was just like, who knows if I'm ever going to like be in this situation again. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. And also how do you link those, like how do you link, bridge the gap between like another year off, you know, like, or waiting and like building another year basically for that Olympic, those Olympic games. So.
Yeah, I did. I just felt like I had a lot of momentum. Going like had a really good world championships, broke a Canadian record. Like I just felt like I was really like going in the right direction. And then it was just like, oh no, we're just gonna like fall off a cliff now. So it was just like pretty disappointing.
Yeah. Was that the biggest setback you've dealt with in your career?
Oh no, definitely not. Last year was like actually kind of, it could have been a disaster. Like I was just injured like over and over and over again. And that was pretty tough. Like I definitely had days when I was injured, just sort of like wondering if I would even run the standard for Worlds. Like, would I even be able to run 1522? Like, would I be able to race? Like, so That was pretty tough. Yeah. And then I just felt like every time I sort of got like a bit of momentum, something would go wrong again. And then I was actually injured in August, with like the world championships in October. So I had like 1 month to sort of like sort myself out. That was just like really hard as well.
Right. How did you cope with that?
Just like in the beginning, like when I started getting injured in like October of like 2018, I was just sort of like, hey, just one day at a time, like do everything that you can do to be better. So I would like cross train, 2 hours a day. I'd be in the gym doing like all my rehab things and strength things and just trying to like be like perfect every day and just to like get out of the injury in the best possible way, just like in the best fitness. And that actually I think like directs your attention to like the right thing rather than be like focusing on things that you can't do. You focus on like what you can do. And so that was fine. And that was like November, December. So like still very early. But then as things like unraveled in like February again, that was like a bit more nerve wracking. And again, just like tried to focus on what I could do. In August, that was definitely like the toughest because I felt like I had been going like quite well. And to just have this like setback again, that was just like really tough. I don't think I like dealt with it the best. But again, you just kind of have to like keep going forward, like just keep trying to cross train as best you can. And just I took a lot of inspiration also from Jen Gregson, who has like a couple of times seemed like she had like no hope and then done really well at World Championships. So I was like, this is possible. I just have to like somehow figure out how to do it.
Right. Yeah. And definitely having those people around you for support.
Yeah.
Counts for something too, I'm sure. Yeah. That kind of like help coach you through that. And like you say, like there's a lot to learn from your peers too. And there's people in similar situations. And I'm sure in that moment, it's got to be the worst thing ever, you know, but eventually you kind of break through and like now you're healthy again. So hopefully that's a sign of good things to come. What has running taught you?
Oh, like so much. I think running, someone like used to say this in university, it's like a metaphor for life. But I think you just learn like resilience, persistence, like dedication, discipline. Like there's just so many things you can learn, from running and like trying to pursue, well, really just trying to pursue anything that's like pretty hard. And just obviously like mental toughness, like so many things. I think like dedication is probably one of the biggest things. Cause like, you don't always want to run. You don't always want to do the things that you have to do to like be better, but you just like have to do them anyways. Also like how to deal with pressure, how to deal with like performing on a world stage. Yeah. I think like just no matter like what happens in my career, I think that I will come out of this whole journey as like a better person or just like a more, just like a stronger person.
Mm-hmm. Any ideas for what you would want to do after your running career?
I want to go to law school. That's like the next big life goal.
Is that what you studied before you went off to run pro?
I did like political science and economics in university, which I mean like for law school you can do whatever you want to do, I've always sort of been interested in like politics, sort of like, I don't know, policy, economics, actually really struggle with that one, but I do think it's interesting. It was just always like the most difficult classes, but yeah, like environmental economics I thought was really interesting, especially living in Australia. I just feel like quite passionate about, just like climate change and hopefully like fixing some of the problems. Like Australia is, definitely just, it's going to really struggle, I feel, in if they sort of don't do anything. Obviously, like they just had the most massive bushfire season in January. Right. It was like really devastating. So yeah, just seeing that and just being like, oh my gosh, like this country really needs to do something.
Yeah, that was a scary time for sure. I remember that being on the news and stuff like that, kind of, I think it was early this year.
Yeah, in January. Yeah, it was devastating for all those communities.
Right. What do you do for fun when you're not running? Cooking's got
Yeah, like cooking, baking, reading cookbooks. it's a hobby of mine. I do read a lot, novels, that I think is, I don't really, I guess that's a hobby. Yeah. Those are pretty much like the things I enjoy doing. Yeah, I guess your anything culture. Like related to food.
Nice. It's not a bad thing for sure. And my last question for you is, what does running mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, like running is, it's like my job, but I don't really see it. I do see it as a job, but I also don't see it as a job. Like I do try to be really professional, but it's not like something that I don't want to do, but it is like so many things. It's like, obviously like physical fitness. It's, mentally, like it's like a mental health self-care practice sometimes. It's a competitive outlet sometimes. It's like how I make friends. It's, I don't know, like running is just, it is like so much for me. And but I also try not to take it too seriously, so it's like really important, but also I try to like keep it in perspective.
That's great. Yeah, I've been reflecting on what you just said quite a bit recently, and just like every time you step out the door, the meaning can be different. You know, you can bring that good attitude to your running, but like you're saying, sometimes you got to work through a problem. Sometimes you just want to go and hammer it. And I love that that idea around it, because when you're doing it every day, it's, you know, it's it, those act as like motivators too. So that's awesome. Where can people find out more about you, Andrea?
My Instagram is a Scapian. That's probably like really the only thing I use that much. I'm trying to narrow down the social media use. Yeah, probably just Instagram.
Yeah, totally. I'm with you on that. It's so easy to get caught up in the social media with everything going on these days, but that is where we share most of our podcast information and new podcasts, and yours will be the first of the year. So thank you for coming on today. I really appreciate you sharing with us your journey, and we wish you all the best for 2021 and getting that qualifying mark for Tokyo.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Take care. Are you already subscribed to La Rundown, Running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to our weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Visit iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. Thank you for joining us on this episode of La Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at iamarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at La Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and hosted by Justin Pugliese.